Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Disney Channel comes to the parks, Jessie's Critter Carousel is about to open,
the size of Galaxy's Edge, new merchandise, the battle between Anaheim and Disney, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of March 20th, 2019. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our supporters on Patreon, including Deanne J for joining at the Park Hopper level, and Kirsten R for increasing her support to the lead level. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live show recordings, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Have you booked your trip to the resort yet? If not, you should. Contact James and Mike over at Concierge and they will take care of your entire vacation from beginning to end. And as an added bonus, you'll get a free year of touring plans. Why wait? Check them out at concierge.com.
If you want to have a voice in the podcast and our discussion topics, please head over to dlweekly.net/vote to register your choice for the next discussion topic. We've been getting a lot of great responses, so please keep up the great suggestions for the future of the show.
Now let's get to the news. If you want to meet your favorite Disney Channel stars, then you will want to be at the resort on April 27th as the Disney Channel Fan Fest will be returning. Stars from The Descendants 3, Zombies, Kim Possible, Andy Mack, and more will be in attendance. There will be a cavalcade of the stars at Disney California Adventure and a Fan Fest main stage that will host sessions with the different stars of the show. Between sessions will be a Quizney game to... I love that. I love that so much. Sorry, I distracted myself.
Yeah.
There will be Quizney games to test your trivia knowledge. Wristbands will be distributed at the park opening for celebrity meet and greets. I'm so proud of myself because up until recently, I had not actually watched any of these Disney Channel movies. However, I did just recently watch the first Descendants movie.
What'd you think? I thought it was an interesting take on Disney
villains. I think it's an interesting take. But yeah, I don't know. It wasn't one of those, like, I must watch it again, but I also didn't hate it. I was entertained. We'll put it that way.
I think that's the second one's not too bad. I haven't seen the third
really,
one.
Really do love, Kristen Chenoweth as Maleficent though. Mm. I really loved that. Mm.
Well, I think this is a great opportunity for people to meet, some of these stars. Cause that's so cool to be able to meet people you see on TV, especially for like kids and stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know? So I think it's pretty awesome. Well, people in our chat and online went crazy when pictures surfaced of the new entrance sign that was installed for Jessie's Critter Carousel this week. Judging by the photos, it won't be long now until this attraction reopens in Pixar Pier.
Oh, you know, I'm excited. This just looks like such a fun carousel to be. It's so whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it.
Yeah, the statue looks pretty good, the of Jessie sitting mm-hmm. there, and then the sign. It definitely does not seem like the old attraction that was there,
yes.
Which was... King Triton's Carousel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I like this. And then we just need the emotional whirlwind and
yes,
Pixar Pier will be complete.
Will be complete, exactly. All over the internet this week, people have been showing different mock-ups of how big Galaxy's Edge is going to be compared to Hogsmeade, Diagon Alley, and Pandora over in Florida. The new land should be about the size of all three of these lands. Combined. Not only has Disney caught up to the level of detail of the Harry Potter lands and recreated the immersiveness of Pandora, it has done so in a massive, massive way.
Now, you looked at this when you were getting ready for the show. You looked at this map and you were
my jaw dropped. I mean, we also kind of think, we've decided, we don't know this for sure, but it also looks to us like Galaxy's Edge is going to be as big as if you combined Critter Country, New Orleans Square, and Adventureland,
mm-hmm.
and even maybe some of Frontierland.
Yeah.
I mean, massive. It's just, I don't know why it didn't dawn on me before that I was going to be this big, but wow.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. There's obviously, you know, we spoke with Alex from Star Wars Explained a couple weeks ago, and definitely there's going to be tons to explore here, and they talk about that there might even be a phase two, that they add more stuff in the future, so that's going to be super interesting as well. It's going to hold a lot of people. 14. That's 14 acres for you. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I mean, we're worried about the crowd sizes, but I mean, even with this being such a massive, how many people is that going to be? That's going to, wow. Good luck if you're going to opening weekend. That's all I got to say.
Teresa's mind explode. Well, once again this week, the scrims came down from Sleeping Beauty Castle refurbishment, and we caught a glimpse of the new color scheme and the replaced roof. The brighter blue of the new shingles looks amazing, and the lighter colors of the rest of the castle bring a more fairy tale, whimsical look. The new changes are really going to make the castle pop when it's unveiled later this spring.
I haven't even seen it all in totality yet, but I already know that I'm going to love it.
You know, I was skeptical because I thought that I liked the subtle colors before, but now that I've seen the brighter colors, this is the smallest of all the Disney castles, except for Hong Kong, which is getting a bigger castle now. I think this is going to make it pop and stand out and seem more there. Yeah. So I'm very excited for this. I like the brighter colors. I do hope that over time that they are able to keep it up, because the brighter colors look great, and then Southern California sun is gonna fade stuff. So hopefully it'll stay nice and pretty for years to come.
Well, previously we talked about the new security tent that was just completed on the harbor side of the resort that is going to help with improved access to the parks, especially in the morning. Now there's going to be another security tent at the Toy Story parking lot. Disney has filed a permit with the City of Anaheim for a 2,500 square foot security tent in the parking lot, along with some bus shelters. This new checkpoint should allow guests parking there to go through security before boarding a bus to the resort and expedite access to the park.
I think this is a really unexpected move, and I think it's a good one, because anywhere that you can split up security and alleviate some pressure on just a couple security checkpoints, I think is great. So this, in a very small way, kind of brings to fruition kind of the Eastern Gateway project, where people are going to do security kind of way off. I am interested to see how they're going to integrate this, because obviously you're going to be on a bus after security, and you're going to get over to the bus drop-off area, which is before the security checkpoint.
Which is outside of the security
checkpoint. So I wonder if they're going to reconfigure that somehow.
Or maybe there's going to be a separate little side gate that they can get, you know, to bypass security. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I think it is a great thing that they're doing, though.
For sure. This is not just going to help the people that are going to that parking lot and going to be using the new security area. This is going to help everybody, because those people now aren't going to be in the same lines as, like, Tag and I, who are staying at one of the hotels and just walking across the street to get into the park. So I think it's great. Anytime that you can get me into the park faster, I'm all about it.
Me too. Well, construction on the new parking structure is speeding toward completion. In the past week, the roof section of the new escalator area was lifted into place. A planter support structure has been installed and awaits new foliage. The only thing that is a mystery is how the tram loading area in the middle of all this will come together.
That darn tram.
Well, because there's been speculation if the tram is going to go kind of around where the new escalators are kind of pull up on the other side. If it's going to exit the same way they're exiting now, or if it's going to somehow go around the existing structure.
So can you clarify this for people like me who have not ever experienced the tram? Are they planning on using the same tram, or is this going to be a different tram?
Same tram.
Okay.
Because right now, when you get out of the Mickey and Friends parking structure, you go down some escalators, and the tram kind of loops around right there.
Sure.
And basically, you just hop on the tram and go. Well, it's going to be a lot different now, because you've got all of the people from the new parking structure that are going to be joining these trams. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're going to add any more tram space or anything like that. They might run more trams, but they're going to have to share kind of one tram loading area.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. The area of downtown Disney that was cleared out for the new hotel that was canceled is slowly coming back to life. Sugar Boo and Company, a home goods, ceramic, and jewelry store, is coming into the area. This will be their first store in California.
Yeah, I don't have too much to say about this. The Orange County Register had an article about this, And they're just kind of a ceramics and jewelry store. I mean, there's nothing that screams like Disney. They are kind of a higher end kind of retail establishment. They do have some stores over in Disney Springs, and they have one in, I think, Las Vegas.
Stores in Georgia, Texas, Kentucky, Florida, and Nevada. So this is actually a family-owned home decor shop, but it's actually run by a Georgia-based artist. Her name is Rebecca Puig, and I'm so sorry that I probably butchered that. But it's actually named for her quote-unquote sugar boo children. I think that's very cute.
Well, not only has Captain Marvel come to the resort in a meet and greet, but you can also satisfy your appetite with food inspired by the character and movie. The studio catering company in Hollywoodland has three special menu items to choose from. They include a Nacho Average Superhero Nachos, which are a vegetarian nacho, a Captain Marvel ice cream sandwich, which is a whoopie pie with red, yellow, and blue vanilla ice cream, and a Captain Marvel slush drink, which is cherry lemonade with strawberry drizzle topped with whipped cream and golden sparkling sugar.
So you know how we usually get really excited about food on this podcast? These just don't, they're not exciting looking to me. And in fact, I would pass. I think after seeing photos of these and reading what people have said, they do not look that appealing to me.
The only thing that looks really appealing to me is the whoopie pie.
So the whoopie pie's got a bright red top and a bright blue bottom with kind of like a, I don't know, it almost looks like soup, you know, like the typical Superman ice cream, yeah, where it's the red and the blue and then the white ice cream all mixed together on the inside. And it's got a nice little, I don't know, thing, like sugar thing on the
top.
It
reminds
that has
me
the
of
Captain
the Pixar
Marvel.
Pure cake. That bright color.
Oh, yes, yes, it does. I was going to say, I don't see the Pixar Pure cake here at all.
No,
but yeah.
Just the bright coloring.
Everything is very brightly colored. The slushy is like a cherry lemonade slushy and bright, bright red. And I don't think I've ever seen blue whipped cream before, but it's on this. Mm-hmm. and then the nachos are they have the blue corn tortilla chips and then red colored tortilla chips as the base for the nachos too. So yeah, for me it's not too exciting, so I would probably pass, but I'm sure this is totally up some people's alley. It's just not mine.
Usually when I read food reviews of stuff that we talk about on the show, people are generally, you know, positive to neutral, especially with the drink. The WDW News Today, who reported on this, they said it was awful, that like they couldn't even finish it. They threw it away.
I am ever so slightly curious about the nachos, though, because the nachos are plant-based nachos that are made with ground, you know, fake meat. But they have it's Thousand Island dressing, lettuce, cheese sauce, pickles, onion, and sesame seeds that are on top of the blue and red tortilla chips. So that just does not say, I mean, it looks like nachos, but the toppings just don't scream nachos to me. So I just don't know how to feel about that. Mm-hmm. But like
I
said, I've not tried it.
$9.99, and it's just kind of like a small portion size too.
Yeah. But I mean, you're always going to pay higher prices because you're, you know, right, in the resort. But yeah, it, you know, with how excited we get about food, these items just weren't too terribly exciting for us.
They're definitely colorful.
So we're laying off the Galaxy's Edge news this week, but we are still going to talk about one of our favorite topics, new merchandise. There are some great options if you're not in the park, but just in downtown Disney or at the resort hotels. You can pick up some great Disneyland Resort themed hoodies and t-shirts at the Disneyland Hotel, Paradise Pier Hotel, or in the Grand Californian Hotel and Spa. Each location has a specific style and a character to their merchandise, so it is worth a look if you have the time. In downtown Disney, there's a lot of cute items at Oh My Disney. One of Tag's favorites is the Magic Carpet Pool Float.
This thing looks awesome. So it's like a inflatable pool toy that looks like carpet from Aladdin, and it's got like a little Abu hanging off of it.
Yeah.
I saw it and I'm like, this thing is awesome. I really want this.
You can also get the matching, they have like matching, they're like genie themed sunglasses that you can get to wear while floating along on your
just want the floaty
little magic carpet pool float.
That is a great idea, though. That's so clever, like to make it up out of the carpet, you know.
That is very clever. Yeah. The other thing they've got too that's pretty cool is they have like, it looks like kind of like the Lion King's version of a spirit jersey. They also have this really neat cover up for women. So it's kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a shawl thing. It's got this really cool kind of geometric black and white design. And then it's got Zazu kind of intermixed in it. I don't know why. I just like it. It makes, it's just, it's different. I like it.
It feels very Lion King for sure. Well, inside the park, there's always great merchandise, especially lately. The new Castle line has a lot of fun items like water bottles, bags, t-shirts, hoodies, and a hardboard journal that looks particularly nice. We also really like the Grand Circle Tour shirt that is available in Frontierland. Now, I was looking at this, and I was very excited to see these water bottles that have kind of like a artist sketch of the castle with the original, like, the classic Disneyland logo. This shirt with Ride the Rails on it has kind of like this cool, like old timey looking like poster for the Disneyland Railroad. And there's even Mickey kind of standing there, which is pretty awesome. And then, like I said, there was this hardboard journal that I love this logo. It's so it's again, it's the hand drawn looking castle. It's got fireworks up in the top and then it's got the D from the, you know, that stylized D behind it. And it says the happiest place on earth. And I just want this. Like, I don't want to draw on it or anything. I just want to like have it.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of castle theme stuff going on. It's beautiful. It's very well done. There's mm-hmm. this really great
classy.
Yes, it is. It's very, very mature looking, I guess we could say. It's not whimsical. It's just very mature. But anyway, so they also have this really nice like zip up hoodie that's got the that same stylized kind of sketch of the castle that includes a sketch of Mickey on the back that looks really nice. Bags. I mean, there's all sorts of different stuff, you guys. There's even kind of some interesting stylized things that have to do with either attractions or favorite movies. So one that I just caught what the reference is on it. I noticed that it was a blue shirt that had a little lamp from Aladdin on it. And I thought that was cute because it's not over the top. It's very, you know, a subtle little nod to the movie. But around the neckline, it had this very script-looking kind of like, it almost looks like smoke or something that's coming out of the lamp. But I've just finally realized what it says. It says phenomenal cosmic powers, and I'm going to assume itty-bitty little living space.
Teresa's very excited for this for whatever reason.
Because it's funny. Yeah. Plus, this is what I'm really, really excited about. They have attraction t-shirts, but they're like classic looking attraction, like the classic posters almost look sure. like for these attractions. So they've got one for the Tiki Room, there's one for the Jungle Cruise, and there's also one that's really cool for Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Yeah, Big Thunder Mountain looks super awesome. It's one of my favorite attractions. So something else I've seen online we didn't actually have in the article we were referencing for this, but you saw the socks that's available, Teresa?
Oh, so many socks. There are so many awesome socks at the resort.
Because you were excited for the socks, weren't you?
I love the socks. Yes. Well, now we take a trip over to Trivia Land, where producer James is going to stump us. Going to. You like how I said not try yeah. this week? He's going to stump us with some Disney trivia. He will read us the question. We're going to attempt to answer them. And then James is going to give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
Oh, we got some good ones for you. We're gonna start with quite a long one, and it's an extensive list.
Oh, geez.
So what stage at Disneyland did the B-52s, Talking Heads, the Police, the Ramones, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Fleetwood Mac, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, The Clash, Quiet Riot, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, Judas Priest, Van Halen, David Bowie, and U2 play on?
Well,
can I get a hint? Is the stage always there or just sometimes there?
The stage is always there.
It's tough because I'm split between two. It's either the Tomorrowland, it's either the Tomorrowland Terrace that comes up and that they do a lot of like stuff there, or it's the what used to be Videopolis but is the Fantasyland Theater.
See, I asked the question because they do a lot of stuff in front of the castle. A lot of stuff in front of the castle.
Yeah, but the stage isn't there all the time.
I know, that's why I asked.
Is this in Disneyland or California Adventure?
In Disneyland.
Okay.
It's gotta be Disneyland.
Do you want to split the difference? Like, I'll pick one, you pick one? I'm going to say Tomorrowland Terrace, because that was my first suggestion. Or my first thought.
I'm going to go, is it an actual stage?
I am talking about a physical stage in the park.
Because I was thinking about it at the end of, the beginning of Main Street. If they were, like, up on the Because I feel like the Fantasyland Theater is really, I mean, it's big, but it's really not that big for those names.
Tomorrowland Terrace is very small compared to that.
But you got lots of, like, you can fit people, like, the Fantasyland Theater, you got to be in there.
You could fit more people in Fantasyland Theater than you can in Tomorrowland.
Well, I guess I'll go with the Fantasyland Theater, reluctantly.
I want to make sure.
Wait, I'm changing my answer. The Fantasmic stage, the Rivers of America stage.
Oh, that's a good one. If she would have said Fantasyland Theater, though, I want to say that that could have also been like, that's that venue. So Videopolis, yeah. Fantasyland Theater, all that.
There is a great history behind that question that
I can't wait.
And I should have prefaced this question come to us from Jeffrey Fletcher.
Ooh. Thanks, Jeffrey.
And he chose his words wisely in the wording of the question. So we'll get back to that one later.
Okie dokie.
The second question comes from Daryl T. And Daryl wants to talk about the Tiki Room pre-show, where you meet several deities. One of them is Pele the Tiki Goddess. What is Pele the goddess of?
Oh, good question.
Pele.
I really wish I paid closer attention to these things instead of enjoying my Dole Whip so thoroughly. Because I know they go on in the background. I recognize the name.
Well, I like it because I like, my name is...
Yes, yes.
Whatever.
But you can't remember. I really like the one, the tree, that like the things, like, yep, the things come down, the flowers come down. Yeah. I'm going to say that's Pele.
Pele's the tree?
Yep.
I'm going to say Pele is... There's a water one. I'm going to say water. Do you know what I'm talking about if I say water?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, you're good.
We're both probably very wrong.
Yeah, we'll find out.
The goddess of Dole Whip.
Yeah.
Actually, a real goddess, so I would not assume there is a goddess of Dole Whip yet.
Sure.
Ooh, there's an opening then.
Teresa, the goddess of Dole Whip. Merch idea. Third question comes from Daniel, who is on a trip to Italy. And found these on the Disneyland Play app while he was waiting in the airport.
Oh.
Very resourceful.
Yes. So, and this one was very timely. So with Dumbo coming out this week, we thought it was a good idea to ask about this question from the original film. So again, from Daniel, in what category did the original animated Dumbo win an Academy Award?
Well, they didn't have all the categories that they have now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, I don't think it was... Oh, I want to say like something with the music.
Oh, I was going to say animation.
If I say something with the music, is that not clear? Is that not specific enough?
I mean, it's technically not a specific award. I mean, I don't think anyone ever wins the Oscar for something with the music, but.
Best original score.
Best original score. That's a good one. What are you saying, Teresa? Technically, this isn't a Disneyland question, James.
But it came from the Disney Play app.
Sure.
The Disneyland
I want to... I'm going to say it was something to do... This is how good we are with Academy Awards, apparently. I think it has something to do with the animation quality, because I feel like they kind of... I don't know. I feel like... I'm thinking of, like, the Pink Elephant theme, scene... And that kind of stuff. I feel like that kind of animation hadn't been done before. I feel like
so what would you call the envelope.
I don't know, because it's not best. It wouldn't be like best animated movie. Is there like technology? No, animation.
Okay, James, can I Google?
It was 1942, so the awards have definitely changed since then.
Can we just? We're gonna Google award names. So
that's fine.
Have some sort of where
Oscar award categories.
No, Academy. Is that the same thing?
Oscars.
Oh. Yeah. I'm going to say 1940 so I don't accidentally get whatever. 12th category. Here's the categories. So, yeah. So I'm going to do best original music score. Oh, here. This could be technical achievement. It could be a technical achievement in animation.
Okay, yeah. We're going to go with a technical achievement in animation.
All right. Our final question. The cannons on the town square in Main Street, in Main Street, USA, were actual cannons used by whom?
Used by whom?
Yes.
Are we looking for a person?
I will accept an organization.
They were used by the Navy. They were on a ship somewhere. That's what I'm going to say. Organization?
Military group? Whatever you want to call it.
The Navy, okay.
I mean, oh, it could have been the Army. I mean, who else is using a cannon?
You don't know.
That's true. I guess it could have been saying? A circus.
This is bothering me because this is one of those, like, as soon as you said it, I'm like, crap. I've read this before. I should know it. I want to say they're like, what organization? So I can't say, like, what it's from.
Why don't you try to answer it and I'll let you know if you're close enough ballpark.
Were they Civil War cannons?
I'll accept that as an answer.
Okay.
I have a fun, potentially tangential story about this.
When we get to the answers?
Once we get to the answers, but you'll have to wait until after the discussion topic to hear all of these stumpers.
Failed.
Oh, failed. Man.
I was joking when I said we weren't going to get any of them right, for the record. I did it. There, that was the one thing I got right, was that we weren't going to get them right.
You each got one.
We did? Yeah.
All right, so this week, our discussion topic is one that was chosen and voted on by you guys, the listeners. Mm-hmm. And this one was the, and this is a complicated one, so we're going to try our best. But basically, we're talking this week about the city of Anaheim versus Disney.
Yeah, and just kind of, not really versus, that sounds like a battle, like they're,
like, it's
like Rock and Sock'em Robots or something. We're just going to say their relationship over the years.
Sure.
Because it wasn't always great and it wasn't always terrible. So,
mm-hmm. In fact, for a long time, it was totally amicable, I would
say. It was very good. So it all started way back in the year that I'm sure most of us know by heart, 1955, which is when Walt Disney asked Anaheim to annex parts of the property and improve infrastructure because he's building his new park. And Anaheim did spend $153,000 on water, sewer, and road upgrades. Disney added $54,000 to that for those improvements.
And if you think about it, that's a pretty good chunk because the entire park was $17 million. Mm-hmm. So good chunk of money there. So Disney didn't ask for anything else. That was kind of it. Walt Disney was just like, hey, if you do some of these infrastructure improvements, I'll be totally happy. They did a bunch of it. He added a little bit more to make sure it all got done. And that was that. And from then until the early 90s, everything seemed fine. Nobody was having any problems with them. They didn't really ask for too much. They kind of were just,
coexisting.
Mm-hmm. Walt Disney was upset, and I'm sure everybody knows this story, that basically he did not like the fact that, you know, all these motels and stuff popped up right outside. He said it felt very Las Vegas to him, right outside the gates of his fantasy dreamland. So there was a little bit of that. Now, in the early 90s, a lot of things kind of changed. So the Cold War ended, and one of the biggest industries in Anaheim, other than Disney, was the aerospace and military industries. And because the Cold War ended, aerospace kind of spun down. A lot of military bases closed or, you know, kind of spun down. So a lot of the money that the city of Anaheim that was getting from those industries kind of dwindled. And so Disney and the resort, you know, the Disneyland Resort, kind of ended up being the main employer in the area when it hadn't been before. And then in 1991, Disney was, with Michael Eisner at the helm, was going through and making all of these expansions. Obviously, in the early 90s, they were finishing up, at the time it was called Euro Disney, which is now Disneyland Paris. Mm-hmm. So they were finishing that up, and as everybody knows, it's still struggling to this day and finally is kind of turning around. They were doing all these big expansions. They had just opened MGM Studios in Florida. Before that, they had opened Epcot in the early 80s. So they were doing all this expansion. Well, of course, Michael Eisner wanted to bring a resort-like experience to the Anaheim or Southern California area. So he wanted Anaheim to pay for $1 billion of their $3 billion to pay for new park in infrastructure upgrades. And he kind of pitted them against Long Beach, and there was plans drawn up for this whole thing in Long Beach, and there was plans drawn up for this for Westcott, which we've talked about mm-hmm. a little bit about before on the show way back. And So it just kind of, you know, they were kind of saying, well, what are you going to give us? What are you going to give us? If you've been paying attention to the news recently, it's kind of like what's been happening with like Amazon, where they were trying to find, you know, somewhere to, you know, have their headquarters or whatever. And around this time, when Anaheim basically said, no, they're not going to do that, one of the main players that has caused some of the disagreements has come into the picture. So Teresa can tell us about that.
His name is Tom Tate. He joined the city council in 1995. And during that kind of period, Anaheim was having, the city was kind of struggling a little bit. The NFL team, the Rams, left the city. The Angels, which is a baseball team, was also threatening to leave too. So again, a lot of big things that were in Anaheim that generated a lot of, you know, tax revenue and generated a lot of jobs for the city were, you know, one of them left and one of them was threatening to leave. So they were probably a little nervous, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you have a couple of other entertainment industries like baseball and NFL bringing people kind of to that area and suddenly they're going to leave after the aerospace industry is kind of dwindled in the military. I mean, it's starting to fall on hard times.
Yeah. That's a lot of things leaving in really a short period of time.
Yeah. So in 1996, so just a year after Tom Tate joined the city council, Disney and Anaheim made a deal to have a moratorium on park ticket taxes and a $510 million bond that basically Disney was going to kind of subsidize, I suppose. This was just after Orange County, which is where Anaheim is located, had just emerged from bankruptcy. So Tate at the time voted for the deal because doing this, as opposed to paying $1 billion into things like Disney had asked for just a few years earlier, seemed like a better idea. So he was kind of for it at the time. So it's kind of interesting because down the road, in a little bit later, we're going to talk about how he kind of changed his mind towards Disney, I would say.
Yeah, so fast forward then now to 2004, Tate actually chose to leave the council then. But in 2010, he ran for mayor and won with Disney's support.
Yeah, Disney was a big supporter of him because what they thought back, you know, in the 90s, 1996,
yeah, they had a good relationship.
Yeah, everything was great. The other thing, too, that's important to know that I didn't put in our notes here, Teresa, but one thing that's important for everybody to know is up until later on here in the story, pretty much the entire city council of Anaheim was very on board with Disney.
Yes.
They really liked them. They would do almost anything for them. And there are still some people on the board to this day that feel that Disney provides, the Walt Disney Company provides enough jobs and stuff that even given these incentives and not being taxed on certain things, still provides enough other tax base from people coming to the hotels, people spending in the community. Mm-hmm. However, as we'll get to here, you'll see why that's kind of maybe not the whole story. So in 2012, Tate turned against Disney and other large companies asking for incentives, describing it as crony capitalism and bad public policy.
Yeah, and so he was kind of referring to how before they were kind of making deals with each other. You know, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine, how they were kind of give and take on different things. So he did not want to continue to do that anymore. And Tate did start to get the rest of the council on board with ending these incentives for the larger companies, including Disney.
Which is kind of a big deal because they were so on board with it for a while. So changing their opinions of this had to have been a massive effort on his part. So we're going to go back just a little bit before Tate became mayor. And in the late 2000s, the Visitors and Convention Bureau thought Anaheim needed more luxury hotels to keep wealthy business folks in Anaheim after work instead of leaving to other neighboring cities for the night. So basically what would happen is, you know, people would come into Anaheim, they'd go to the convention center or they'd go, you know, have some kind of meeting or something there. But there was no good accommodations other than the Grand Californian. So people would go to neighboring communities that had better luxury hotels, and they would spend the night there and buy dinner and stuff there. So they were kind of losing that income. So they needed to do something about it.
The previous mayor, Kurt Pringle, and the council voted to apply the 15% hotel room tax to the first $130 spent on new luxury hotels for 10 to 15 years. So what that means is, say your room was $200, the first $130 of that would be taxed at 15%. So anyway, so the plan was for this to go on for 10 to 15 years, and unfortunately that actually did not happen.
Yeah, it didn't encourage anyone to come and build any luxury hotels or anything like that. So it didn't work. And then, of course, after that failed, Tate became mayor. And then in 2012, Pringle showed back up as a consultant for a hotel developer, which it's rumored to be one of the hotels, one of the companies that he was representing was actually the Disney company, which is kind of funny. And he wanted more of a subsidy to be able to bring in more of these things, because he's trying to bring in higher class, you know, higher spending clientele to the area, and they want these luxury hotels. And this is kind of where, earlier in the year, you know, we talked about the big hotel that got canceled. That was supposed to be a diamond hotel.
Yep, that was going to be one of these luxury hotels. Well, Pringle met with Tate and wanted 100% of the city's share of the tax for 15 years. Tate wasn't so sure that that would pass, but it actually did.
Yeah, he basically was like, sure, bring it to the council. Council, we'll there's
see what,
no
yeah,
way.
We'll see what happens. It's not going to go.
And then it did.
Guess what? Which, I mean, really is crazy. That's really shocking that that got through. That's a lot of money.
Now, where it kind of adds, and this can get kind of controversial, but I'm just reporting on the research we did. This isn't my opinion. This is the research that was done. The city council at this time, so for those of you who may not be aware of the Anaheim area, if you look at it from above, and this was a great description in the article I got this from, it's kind of like a bow tie. So the eastern side of the city is the Anaheim Hills, where there's a lot of wealthy white people that kind of live there. There's the bow tie part in the middle that is the Anaheim Resort District, where Disneyland is. And then there's the western side, which is which at the time, and is even more so now, a large Latino population of just kind of middle to lower class financially people on that side of the city. Well, they didn't really have representation on the city council. So in 2012, the ACLU filed a lawsuit that the council was too white and didn't represent the large Latino population. This resulted in the council moving to a district-based system for city council seats. So instead of saying, we have this many council seats, people can vote, they get on it. This time it's like, okay, well, you have districts, and those districts vote for their representative, and they go on the council.
Yeah, which makes it way more fair. You know, it doesn't... You never want your city council to be lopsided one way or the other. You want it to be a very even representation. So it's unfortunate that at this point in time it wasn't as even as it should have
been. But with that in mind, think about this, though, Teresa. So remember we got back to the fact that the council passed 100% of the city's share of the tax for 15 years? Mm-hmm. If you live in a wealthy neighborhood that, like, everything's nice and gorgeous and there's no problems, you don't care.
Yeah, you don't think that it's important. Whereas if you're coming from an area where, well, I'm going to go on personal experience right now. We've got potholes that are bigger than...
sucking up cars.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they're huge. So if you're in an area that the roads are, like, literally falling apart and, like, sucking your car down into the abyss... okay, maybe not that bad. But you know what I mean? If you're in an area like that, you're thinking, well, wait a minute. That money could go and fix this, or, you know, it could do so much, you know,
fund
so much more good.
Fund education programs.
Versus going somewhere where your roads are perfect and brand new. Well, we don't need that money. You guys can keep it. It's fine. Well, we're going to jump ahead again to 2015 now, which was when the 20-year gate tax incentive was set to expire. And Disney offered to invest $1.5 billion with Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in exchange for 45 years of no gate taxes. And so this is, we're talking about like your like admission. Gate as in like your ticket to get into Disneyland.
Is not taxed.
That tax there.
Yep. Yeah. So if you think about this, there's a couple things. First of all, I honestly would not mind if my ticket at Disneyland was taxed to better the community. But Disney already, they want to keep all of that, basically. So if they raise their prices and there was a tax on it, it makes it even less affordable than it arguably already is.
Yeah.
So they want to keep that as low as possible. So they're like, hey, we'll spend $1.5 billion on Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, and you know, you guys don't... charge taxes on our tickets for 45 years. That is a long time.
That's a very long time.
So can you imagine the amount of taxes that they're going to basically kind of miss out on for the next 45
years? We'll lowball. What if it's only $1 a ticket? How many tickets do they sell each day?
Right.
How many tickets do they sell each week, each month, each year, times 45?
Right.
That's a lot of dollars.
So in 2016, there was an election, and the new system went into place with the election stuff after the ACLU, and Tate gained the majority on the council. So at this point, he could actually go against Disney, which was nice. So if he wanted to go against these corporations that wanted incentives and stuff, he could. He actually had people on the council now that would vote with him. Not everybody, but he could get people to vote against that.
So also in 2016, the subsidies to Disney was a big central issue of the campaign. They pointed out that the subsidies made the tourist children happy, but not so much for the local children, which unfortunately some of them, a lot of them, can't afford to actually go to the parks.
Yeah. So again, that gets back to what we were talking about is this big wealthy corporation that doesn't need money is getting these tax breaks when people that live in the community aren't getting the benefit of the tax dollars that they pay into, basically. Mm-hmm. So got kind of sticky there.
Yeah, so currently the city council is pretty strained by the opposing sides of this issue. Some of them think that the incentives are still great for the city as a whole, while others think that they need to focus more on the neighborhoods and the citizens of the city and take the focus away from and also kind of not rely on partnering with these big companies mm-hmm. that are in the area.
Now, another thing that got thrown into this as well, just a few months ago, because so when they canceled the hotel project after that, because there was a whole, we reported on this whole thing mm-hmm. of the city and them going against each other and, you know,
kind of back and forth,
splitting hairs over, oh, you moved where you were going to put the hotel, so you don't account for those things mm-hmm. anymore, you know, for the incentives anymore and everything. So right after that, another thing that happened, so Disney kind of, they gave an olive branch and basically said, here's the deal. We don't want any of the incentives. We want to work with you, whatever, right? So that sounds great, right? Wouldn't you mm-hmm. think like, oh, Disney's being awesome. They're giving this back. Well, some say that the reason that they were like that was because there was a measure on the ballot that if approved, any company that got subsidies would have to be bound to pay their workers at least $18 an hour. And so something that looked like Disney extending an olive branch and getting rid of these subsidies actually was because having to pay their employees more would actually cost them more in the long run than spending the money without the subsidies. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So they kind of pulled out of that. And so because they don't have any subsidies anymore, the council voted, sure, we won't do any subsidies. Because they don't get those subsidies anymore, now they just have to wait for the California minimum wage law to take effect, which I believe is in 2022 is when the minimum wage goes up to that. So it's still a few years off.
Yeah.
So it would have been sooner. It's very complicated. Researching this and reading, we have a link in the show notes to the article that I got a lot of this from.
It's a really great article. If you guys are, you know, more interested to really dive deep into it, I know we kind of just gave you guys a little brief history, and by no means are Tag and I
experts
in politics whatsoever. No. So, you know, if something we said didn't quite make sense, or you wanted to learn more about one of the specific things we kind of, you know, bulleted
mm-hmm.
talked about, you know, I would definitely recommend looking at this article.
The other interesting thing that's coming up too is the next election. Tate is actually not rerunning for mayor. So he's worried that the next person who becomes mayor is actually going to kind of go back into the old things. Yeah, I was
going to say, so this could all flip-flop again. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely interesting.
Interesting thing that we did find, and it was in this article, is we found out how much Disney does pay roughly each year to the city in taxes. And it was 80-some point whatever million. I don't remember if it was 86.1 or 81.6 now. But it's over $80 million a year. It's a substantial amount.
But like I pointed out, their budget mm-hmm. is almost $2 billion
a year.
Yeah,
but we saw how much the city actually, you know, so how much. So even though it sounds like a lot, in the grand scheme of what the city's budget is, it's not the entire budget.
No, it's very small. I mean, comparatively, I mm-hmm. guess. But, you know, I'm hoping that in the future, as things go, I hope things kind of even out. That's
yes.
all I kind of want.
Yeah, I hope that they get back to a better relationship. You know, not one that's benefiting one versus the other more. You know, something that's more even, I guess, would be good
mm-hmm.
for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you guys have any comments on this? Do you have any other information about the city of Anaheim versus Disney? Send us an email. Let us know. feedback@dlweekly.net. We'd love to hear about it. It's definitely an interesting conversation. I know it's not the type of conversation we generally talk about on the show. We usually, you know, stay kind of lighter and kind of talk about more park-specific related stuff. But this was voted on by you guys, so this is what you guys wanted to see the most.
Yeah, so I hope you found it very interesting and maybe you learned something you didn't know.
Yeah, I definitely did.
Well, we're going to move on. We got this really amazing piece of feedback that we wanted to share with you guys this week. So... Default Boy on this was from iTunes. So Default Boy on iTunes said, "I'm 11 years old. My name is Austin, and I love your podcast. You guys fill me with happiness when I had a bad day. Keep up the great work." Pulling at my heartstrings, Austin. That was amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to write in and give us a review on iTunes. That means so much to us. But I'm so glad that we're able to bring some Disney magic to you, especially when you're having a bad day.
Yeah. I don't know, Teresa, you've had bad days.
Everybody has bad days.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying when you come into the podcast, does that kind of make things a little bit better?
Oh, yes, it does. So, yeah, I'm right with Austin. If I'm having a bad day talking about Disneyland, snaps me right out of it.
Yeah. But then we just want to be in Disneyland. Yeah. That's the other thing.
Then it makes
sense. Well, Austin, I hope that you're able to get to Disneyland soon.
Yes.
And that'll make you happy as well. I'm glad that our podcast can do that for you. So thanks for writing that. We had to share it. We usually don't share a lot of feedback anymore, but it was
so
very
sweet.
Well, did you know that you can rate and review DL Weekly on iTunes every 6 months? If you haven't reviewed us recently, please do so, as it helps get our ranking better and allows us, the community, to grow.
Did you enjoy listening to this episode of DL Weekly? You can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat that we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. So please consider joining supporters like Steve H and head over to dlweekly.net/support. Well, now it's time to return to James in Trivia Land to get the answers to this week's very difficult trivia. Yeah,
I figured I've been slack in the past couple of weeks, so had to step up the game. And
we have stories, too.
Yeah, lots of stories.
Yes, and thank you to everyone, because I think all of these were listener-submitted questions this week, correct?
The last one is a producer James special.
Okay.
So three out of four.
So thank you to Jeffrey, Daryl, and Daniel for taking the time to submit some very challenging questions to us this week. We appreciate it.
We need somebody to send in some lowball questions. Yeah.
All right, so what are the answers, James?
All right, so the first question is, what stage at Disneyland did the B-52s, Talking Heads, The Police, The Ramones, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Fleetwood Mac, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, The Clash, Quiet Riot, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, Judas Priest, Van Halen, David Bowie, and U2 play on? And this one's courtesy of Jeffrey Fletcher.
I said the Tomorrowland Terrace.
And I said the, what did I call it now? The Phantasmic
stage.
Yeah, or the Rivers of America stage.
Now, originally you had said Fantasyland Theater, so... Mm-hmm.
Which, yep. I'm thinking...
Yeah, you two should have stuck with the Fantasyland Theater, because the important word in that question was what stage, and the stage that is actually in the Fantasyland Theater was actually originally built outside of Disneyland.
What?
That's fascinating. Ooh,
wait, there's a story.
What a tricky, tricky question.
There's a story.
Yeah, so it actually was built... for a festival called the US Festival, which was in 1983, Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, had the vision for the event and paid for the construction of the then temporary state-of-the-art stage. And it's been located in its place in Disneyland since 1985, back when it was Videopolis.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so the site hosted this big festival with a lot of these big names. And the site, as of 2007, was the largest amphitheater in the U.S.
Wow.
So.
That's incredible. That is incredible. A piece of Disneyland history that I knew nothing about. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Took the music fan to share it with us. So I'm glad that path crossed. So. All right, the second question, which came from Daryl T., was, in the Tiki Room pre-show, you meet several deities. One of them is Pele, the Tiki goddess. What is Pele the goddess of?
I said water.
I said Pele's the tree. I didn't know what she was the goddess of.
So Pele is the goddess of fire and volcanoes.
Oh!
So wrong.
And had you asked for a hint, I would have told you her statue had been replicated at Disney's Polynesian Village Resort and Hong Kong Disneyland's Tishan Terrace. But which that wouldn't probably have wouldn't have helped wouldn't you have at
helped.
All.
I'm still voting for Goddess of Dole Whip.
Goddess of Dole Whip. Teresa.
Teresa, Goddess of Dole Whip.
See, Teresa, we need to make some merch with, like, you
with
as
me?
A tiki.
Oh, boy.
And say, Teresa, Goddess
Nobody's
of Dole Whip.
Nobody's going to want that.
I would buy one of those just to wear it next to you.
I'm with the Goddess of Dole Whip.
Yeah. You know, I'll bet you Vern would buy one.
Oh, God.
We got to make this happen, though.
I feel like producer Vern would be obligated for that.
Oh. If there's anybody listening that can draw Teresa as a tiki god, we will make it some merch.
Oh, no.
This is going to be incredible.
Let's hope we have some good artists. All right.
Third question coming from Daniel. With Dumbo coming out this week, we thought it was a good timing to ask a question about the original film. In what category did the original animated Dumbo win an Academy Award?
I said original score.
What did I say?
You said technical achievement.
So I'm going to give Tag the point. The category is best scoring of a musical picture.
Scoring of a musical picture.
1942 category. So it was also nominated for best original song for Baby Mine, but did not win that one. So
such a sweet song.
Yeah. So now we'll have to wait and see next year if they can pull off
anything.
Apparently,
I was the only one impressed with the animation.
It was good. I'm with you. All right.
The final question: the cannons on Town Square in Main Street, USA, were actual cannons used by whom?
And I said the Navy.
And I said Civil War.
It was used by the French Army.
The French Army.
So I had to chuckle when you were guessing U.S.-related military, because for my bachelor party, part of it was me driving a tank. True story. But the military, at least, doesn't sell tanks to civilian groups for people to use. So they had to import all these tanks from foreign militaries. So I have to assume that cannons would fall under the same line, and that's why you won't see any of these kind of products that are from American military, actually.
Interesting.
And yes, driving a tank was amazing. Well, I had great success this week, thanks to many
great
of you
success.
Submitting great trivia questions, and I'd love to keep up the momentum. If you have trivia you'd like to send me to Stump Tag and Teresa, my email is trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.